I think, David, the main messages are really writ large on the front of the press release. So I think that from what has been a very strong operational year, you can pull out three things. Great capital recycling. So you may remember we set out our stall in 2014 that we felt it was appropriate to be a net seller of assets, and this year was the biggest yet net sales of about $650 million,
yeah.
As we sort of crystallized surpluses from the development successes we've had in the last couple of years, and just the sale of Rathbone and 7389 Oxford Street have crystallized £227 million worth of surplus, and as you know, we're giving back 110, being the Rathbone surplus, in a special divvy next week.
Yeah.
So that's point number one. Point number two, operational success, really in our leasing. It's been a great run. The team has done a brilliant job at securing as many lettings as we have, 52 across the year, mm-hmm. on average ahead of ERV. And if you look at the deals that they have under offer right now, it's £6.9 million worth of rent at 2.4% premium to the March 17 ERV. So, you know, that run rate is continuing, and indeed, second half was a record number of lettings for us in our investment portfolio. So we're really pleased with that. The third point I would make is that we have put this business in an extraordinarily strong position, both from the prospect of the pipeline of developments we've amassed. 40% of the group is now in our pipeline. It's probably never been bigger than that. 14 schemes, all within 5 minutes of a Crossrail or tube station. Mm-hmm. So huge strength in our future prospect from the portfolio's perspective and from the balance sheet's perspective, because gearing today is, even after the special divvy, down at 12%. So,
sure.
You know, we're in a very good place.
So in terms of having kind of got those capital receipts in, kind of having low gearing, does that now put you back into buy mode? Are you in kind of the kind of confident position to be back kind of looking at opportunities more aggressively? And if so, what sort of opportunities are we talking about?
Okay. So have you by any chance got a copy of the presentation in front of you?
I do,
that we
of course.
Just done?
Yeah.
Okay. Just go, if you wouldn't mind, slide 17, which is the one headed executing our strategy. The numbers are in the bottom right of each of the little pictures.
17. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Slide 17.
So it's the one headed, as you've rightly suggested, net sales to preparing to invest.
Yeah.
So if you look at the orange bars, you can see that we were net buyers in 11-12, these are years to March, 11-12-13, and then year to March 14 we turned net seller. Mm-hmm. And that felt to me, to us, to be exactly right given what the market was doing, and you can see the grey line there showing what IPD was doing.
Yeah.
And we have just delivered our biggest ever net sales right at the very point that the market is inflecting. And so, to your question, it's absolutely the right thing to conclude that we move from net sales into a more balanced position, and indeed if we find interesting opportunities that we think are accretive to our business, into a net buying position.
Sure.
But it's probably a little early to conclude that by the time we're sitting here this time next year talking to you, we'll be a net buyer. Yeah. We'll have been a net buyer, I don't know, but we're unlikely to be anything like the net seller that we have been this year.
Sure.
And it's much more likely that we'll be a net buyer, and indeed today we have 50 million quid worth of deals under offer to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all the sorts of things that we typically like, being risk, being a bit of land, you know, empty buildings, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's that part of the market where we have seen a degree of movement in pricing already, and where we think there will be more movement pricing.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do you think it's kind of far enough to justify the point at which you're kind of, you know, do you think it's a fair point in the cycle yet for you to be sticking a hand in your pocket for those sort of opportunities, or do you not? You say that you think there's a bit of a way to go in terms of pricing still.
I would encourage you not to be too prescriptive on,
sure.
on your own side, because the truth of the matter is, in a market like this, which is, there's always going to be at every point in the cycle, a good sale that you could make and a good buy that you can make. And it was ever thus. And it's because it's so difficult to commoditize assets in our game, and information is imperfect, and different people have different risk positions, etc. So, are we going to find interesting things to buy next year, over the next 12 months, even in a flat market? Answer: yes. Will we find more to buy if there was a crisis? Answer is yes. Again,
sure.
But one of the beauties of being a mid-sized company is it doesn't take a huge amount for us to move the needle.
Sure.
So we don't need to buy billions to move the needle. We can do deals of 50 million or so and see the impact.
Sure. Just to play devil's advocate on kind of recycling cash, and in particular the special dividend. I interviewed David Sleath on stage at this kind of profile interview last week actually, and he was talking about kind of pre-crash last time, and how they'd made a huge amount of money selling their US business and gave all the money back to shareholders, and then wanted it all back at the wrong time. You know, I'm not to say you shouldn't give a special dividend back to your shareholders when times are good, but I suppose there's also an argument to say you know there's a temptation to hold on to cash, to have it in the bank as a bit of a war chest. I suppose it's, you know, maybe in two minds, but you obviously have a lot of things to kind of work out when you're making those sort of decisions.
No, absolutely, and I think the key part here is getting the balance absolutely right. And clearly, when we made the decision to return the capital on the back of the Rathbone sale, we moved LTV from 7% up to 12%. So it wasn't as though we were significantly gearing up the business. And if you look at where leverage prospectively goes from here on slide 14 in the book, which is headed Balance Sheet Strength, mm-hmm. You can see that 12.2% in the near term will rise a little bit, because clearly we do have some residual commitments on the three on-site schemes. We clearly have, with the decisions that we will make likely over the next 6 to 18 months with regards to the near-term CapEx, where we have the two uncommitted schemes, and then we're also investing into the refurb program. So it is like the leverage will move up a little bit in very, very short term, but then we will overlay the fact that there is capital due to come back to us through the Rathbone residential sales proceeds, which takes LTV back into the low teens. But the key thing that was really important for us to highlight on this slide is that on the one hand, that gives us the ability to go and buy aggressively if opportunities emerge that we think are accretive to shareholder returns. And we put some illustrative numbers down there, and our through the cycle leverage range is 10 to 40. So let's say you put $1 billion into the model. Well, that leaves you less than 40. Yeah, but equally, you'll see them on the page, is that we will absolutely maintain our balance sheet discipline. And so if we don't find those opportunities, we might give back a little bit more. But what we certainly won't do is put ourselves in a position where we're giving back money and then finding ourselves in a position that 5-6 months later, we really need it back. You know, we will get that balance as appropriately as we can do. And if we were expecting a rerun of the 2007-09 crash, where values were falling by 45%, you'd certainly be absolutely reducing the amount that you give back. So I think the key is just keeping our options open. And again, when we receive the monies back from the Rathbone Resi, you know, then we can make a call. We don't need to do it until then.
Yeah, that's, well, certainly seems to make a lot of sense to me. I think kind of an interesting question is, you guys have, you know, you're respected as an absolute best in class operators. You know, you clearly have had, you know, strong success on the sales side. The strategy of recycling capital has been absolutely sound. But then you see kind of negative factors in terms of sentiment, NAV, kind of NAV valuations, etc. And you have a kind of wider macroeconomic sentiment elements which are largely beyond your control, particularly when you're a, you know, you're a London focused specialist. So just interested to know whether there's kind of, does that frustrate you in some senses, that almost, you know, kind of however good a job you do, you're kind of open to sentiment, and obviously with the backdrop of Brexit, etc.
Quite the opposite, actually, David. I think it's the origin of opportunity. And I think that what you also need to remember about this game is that nothing happens in a hurry. And performance is a long-term game. So, you know, measuring short-term value moves, they may be good or they may be bad, but in the short term, it doesn't matter by reference to how you deliver over the long term. And that's where we have been very willing to sell assets that might have given us a better valuation outturn this time round, but we've been turning that into hard cash that we can then put into buildings that we know will drive long-term outperformance, which if we didn't, we wouldn't outperform. So if you look at the last 10 years, say, we underperformed at the beginning of the cycle because we held the sort of stuff that we wanted to redevelop, and it was riskier, and by definition, therefore, it fell in value slightly faster. We then absolutely thumped the market when we got to work on turning those buildings that represented raw material into finished article assets, let well, sold well. And that's the game plan. So you raise a very good point, but because you allow me to say, you know, short-term pain, and it's not really, frankly, that painful given our defensive balance sheet, long-term, massive gain. And that's what this is all about.
Sure. To ask a kind of slightly provocative question, obviously there was the discounts that London REITs have been trading at, are not as great as they were kind of straight after the election, but there was a huge kind of sense of hype afterwards, and you know, it never truly goes away, the prospect of a central London REIT being taken out, given the long-term attractiveness and kind of sovereign wealth money desperate to get back into the market. Do you think that such an opportunity could ever present itself, either to you guys or any other central London specialists, because of the kind of discounts to NAV?
It's a very, very difficult question for me to talk about in any degree of clarity to guys like you, not because I don't want to, but just because it's clearly a dangerous subject to get caught in on.
It's my job, though, Toby.
It is, and I respect you for asking the question, quite right. And I think, you know, from my perspective, we focus on unashamedly generating returns, be that at the asset level or at the shareholder level. If we felt that the best route for generating returns were either to go and, you know, stick our necks out and go for a big acquisition, or indeed stick our necks out and go for a bloody big sale,
sure,
that's what we would do, because we have an ethos and a culture which is very strongly aligned with shareholders, and we're big shareholders ourselves.
Sure.
But I would just add that there's been, for as long as I can remember, I mean, as long as I've been in this industry, hype around M&A that is normally just that. It doesn't always turn into actual business. And I think one of the things that you will know at the moment is these discounts at teens percent are not significant in the context of some of the periods of great uncertainty where discounts were much bigger.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't take very much by way of rumor and speculation and even offers to close discounts instantly. So they're not real, those discounts, when it comes to M&A.
Yeah.
Because I mean, most REIT shareholders wouldn't entertain a bid at a discount of any description, let alone a small one. They'd want a premium. So, you know, our preference has been to go buy assets where there really are discounts available, because somebody's got a bit of a downer on the risk involved, or they haven't got the money, or, you know. And that's where we make our money, is by buying assets at a discount to replacement cost, And that's why the last cycle for us was so successful.